Welcome to the SNS ICE podcast, your go-to source for the latest news and in-depth insights into the world of 6G in Europe. Join us as we dive into industry news, analyze the latest trends, and discuss the development of the new generation of cellular networks.
This is so the last panel session. Let's try to have some question to fill the gap with what was not fulfilled today, if any, but let's try. Okay, I have here a couple of questions for the panelists. So first question, how can 6G fulfill enterprise needs that will remain unattended with 5G advanced? So as you know, today we have in place 5G non-standalone. Most of the operators are deploying 5G advanced, 5G standalone. They will deploy 5G advanced and then go to 6G after 2030. Are there here new sectors that are poorly addressed with 5G evolution and that 6G may address? Not sure who wants to take these questions. Could be any of you. Maybe Alessandro, do you? Which is my colleague, so I know I can.
Actually, it's a very tricky question, I would say. I can answer, let's say, from the perspective of TriasNet project, at least what are the issues that we are currently dealing with. There are for sure some use cases that are quite demanding for the actual technology, especially from some SMEs that are actually deploying solution, relying on wired connection, so relying almost on 0 millisecond latency as well as almost quite a, let's say, infinite bandwidth. So with respect to this, we started to, let's say, to implement their application. I'm talking, for example, for some security and safety SME that are actually, managing robots locally. So their intention, for example, would be to have a control room remote from which they can actually control the robots with, let's say, the same latency that they should have, let's say, on site. On the other side, we have also some SME that are producing video contents, for example, related to the experimentation we're going to have to the WYSIWYG Stadium. In that case, the idea is really to unwire all, for example, all the camera that can catch, the match from the field, in order to have more flexible deployment of the overall content production infrastructure. So in such a cases, we already identified, as was reported in the last slide, that uplink could be, for example, a current limitation. Of course, we have to think about which are, the ideal deployment of such type of system, because, of course, we cannot think to put infinite cameras. We have to find also a trade-off between the deployment and the performances. At the same time, there are also some e-Earth use cases that are actually, dealing with the same issues in which also the latency is going to play an important role. But as I was anticipating, the latency at the radio level actually with 5G is already very low. So I think it is also a question to optimize, for example, the layer on top of the physical one exactly to deal with the issue. Because, of course, the latency if measured at the application level should take into account all, the portions of delay that has been added by each level. Anyway, we think that there are room to improve the current technology. Of course, they will require further studies, further trials, and this is actually the objective that we are having right at the moment.
Okay, thank you, Alessandro. So basically, there is a technicality in which a technical feature where 6G can bring in more with respect to 5G. Okay, I'm not sure if maybe Janina, if you think that there are some use cases that 5G really cannot cover, that is, your partners ask, okay, no, here we need 6G, we cannot make it for 5G. Did you have any time this impression, or do you think that 5G is fully covering?
So for what we have also in the TargetX project are, for example, some robot use cases where we see the issue with the limited uplink. So having the possibility to tailor and adapt the network to the needs would be a feature that would be interesting to include. especially if we think about scaling the use cases. So if we are able to scale one of the or kind of implement one of the robots, that's one out of 5 to 10 to 50 robots in a site. So it's not, to really fulfill the vision that we have, it's important to be able to cater to all of these. And perhaps, And another thing that we really see what we would appreciate with 6G is kind of having better integration. So being able to really have a seamless experience and have a plug and play system so that we can just,
Okay.
Just implement.
Okay. Thank you. So I will just stick with both of you since you have been running so many trials in those past years. So my question would be, do you think there are any regulatory or policy factors that limit use cases? Did you have this experience that, regulators say, no, you cannot do that?
Regarding this uplink, issue that I just named, there's of course the TDD patterns. So in theory, it's possible to also invert to have a little more uplink. But the regulation is, due to the synchronization between the cells, the regulation is that you cannot do that because you have to be synced. And, these are things that are kind of standing in the way for us to really implement in the use case because we are facing the limitations. And another thing is regarding spectrum. So have different spectrums in all of the regions in the world. And also kind of, So if we are developing an application, we then kind of need to adapt it to different regions or so being able to plan would be, beneficial.
Okay. Not sure, Alessandro, if you want to add something to you.
Yeah. First of all, of course, I definitely agree with Janina's comments. And anyway, we faced also, constraints or issue that were applied for what concerned the ethics, ethics regulation or ethics policy. So since our trials are involving real users, we were not, so much prepared exactly to deal also with this issue. So we started really to work with that, also engaging third parties such as ethics committee that could somehow analyze our use cases and suggest how the measure to be taken that are not essentially technical, but also, from the management perspective on how, to deal with the ethics issue and make us able really to run the trial with real users. So about the technical issues or anyway policies, of course, this is something that can be anyway worked on with the bodies. But of course, ethics was an aspect that we were not taking so much into account at the beginning.
Okay, very interesting that ethics come into the game in use cases. Fine, thank you very much, Alessandro. Let's try to see 1 year ahead. So let's go to 2025. Here, the question would be to Javier, who is leading the work programs in SNS joint undertaking, so in an SNS office. So Javier, what do you think will be the RSN for trials and platform and pilots in SNS joint undertaking work program 2025? What will so be the main areas for these activities? And what do you think will come after, so in 2027, to fill the gap with 6G market deployment? So how will we go to the market with a world program?
Yeah, we are currently discussing this at the program level, the priorities for next year, and I hope we will close the world program very soon. Carles is a member of our governing board, so he's very much involved. We have some certainties and some things that are still under discussion. For example, on the certainty side, we are going to have increased role on non-terrestrial networks. So this is going to be a priority. And also of photonics technologies, for example, fiber is going to become also an integral part of the 6G vision. And we can also probably see some more activity in the telco edge cloud continuum. That is a big discussion on the white paper. I really like the last comment of Misha before, I found it really interesting. This comment on the data tsunami that probably we are going to face, because right now we have two different views of the future that both can be true, but I think we have to be very careful on understanding what is going to be the discontinuity that can't move from one to the other. One is that the model based on consumers, on eyeballs, is showing that is almost exhausted. And I think from that point of view, the traditional kind of type of services that we had in the past probably are reaching a peak, or they are close to that. And we have not seen yet a big emergence of machine-to-machine traffic. That can change soon because of AI, and can change dramatically. And I think the discussion that he said on drones, on droids, on many devices that decouple humans being active from actually the network demand, I think we are going to see it very soon, and this can have a huge impact. So what we are trying to do, and I think this is connected with some of the technologies that they have mentioned, Uplink is a relevant one, is try to see which would be the initial verticals that we probably will be more interested in into that. I saw the other day an interview with Elon Musk when he was talking about Tesla, and I found it really interesting because he was not talking about Tesla as an automotive company, but as a company that have 20 million devices moving in the streets with 8 high-definition cameras on each, that they are recording thousands of hours of video of the most important cities in the world, and that had a lot of real-time information that can be put on the market for exploitation. So I think it's a very interesting view of seeing the business models of the future. So automotive is not only about transportation of people from A to B. It can be about many, many things, because they have LiDARs, radars on top, video cameras. It's going to be the same with drones, probably, with droids, with many other things. And I think it's part of what we are trying to incorporate into the program. But I have to say, honestly, I have to recognize that the program is really a collective effort of a lot of people, like some of you are here in Europe, that dedicate their time, their effort, to try to think collectively of what can we do about this. So at the end of the day, we are just the meeting point. I think the recognition should be for the whole research community. Some of it is represented here, and I think sometimes we forget with all that.
Okay, thank you, David. So the next work program will be published somewhere in time next year, I suppose. And well, we will see what will come with the work program. Okay, so let's move a little bit to the business, to the money. So let's address Vivek for that. Okay, Vivek, you showed us this huge opportunity in front of us in the B2B space, mainly. As I said, 6G, 5G, 6G are industry-driven technologies, mainly because, as I said, it is difficult to foresee in this moment new application in the consumer space that, you know, will disrupt consumer habits and the business, actually. So me too, I see mostly the B2B, the enterprise opportunity there. So what do you think we'll need, 6G, 5G will need to address this new opportunity, this 3 billion, this 3 trillion, sorry, market, of which 1 trillion is addressable by operator? Do you think that evolution from 5G to 5G advanced to 6G is key, or do you think it is more that operators should move their capabilities and readapt it, not more to the IT kind of service, of business model or IT company?
So I will answer this in maybe a few levels or parts, right? First of all, in the near term, right, if we see with the deployment of 5G, 5G advanced, I think focus is required on building new capabilities, right? Just not selling the advanced connectivity solutions like network slicing, etc., but taking it to the next level, like I mentioned during my presentation, that building a new layer of specialized services on top of connectivity services. But if I look this from a more longer term perspective, right, The real question is that how can we stimulate the enterprise interest in some of these technologies, right? I mean, one part is the supply side, right? That the technology is there. There are so many things you can do with it, right? But is there really a sound business case or a need from enterprises, right, to do it? And if we think more and more about it, I think the 5G experience tells us that the expectations are really divergent. If we look the expectations from operator side, right, probably operators will think, you know, that as we move from 5G advanced to 6G, probably AI, ML will make the operations more cost effective. There will be, let's say, an easier or a smooth and cost effective way of migrating from 5G to 6G. But if you look expectations from enterprise side, right, probably they are looking for backward integration with technology, right? If for example, car, right, is fitted with some devices, right, and in 2030 we say, okay, forget 5G, it's 6G now. Is it really practical for them to really rip the, you know, devices that are already installed in the cars and they are going to change? Who is going to bear the cost? Right? So backward integration with technology, more security, maybe easier deployment and manageability of these private networks. Those are the expectations that enterprises have. And when we think about this, I think the key thing for me is as the industry is looking to evolve from 5G to 6G, there has to be greater collaboration, right? As part of these 6G R&D work programs, more and more collaboration with vertical industries to understand and address those issues which have really hindered the uptake or adoption of 5G technology. Unless we do that, I don't see a way how 6G will really, you know, create a lot of innovation, drive a lot of innovation, or maybe, you know, unprecedented value creation. So that's, I think, going to be key from a long-term perspective.
Yeah, thank you, Vivek. I think you raised a couple of very, very, very good points there. Yeah, first of all, vertical engagement, you know, in building up 6G. So in the 6G Industry Association, we have a vertical task force, which I'm chairing, and we have in place MOUs with the most important vertical associations. So we have a discussion on a day-by-day basis, and we try to gather what are the problems in adopting 5G, so to avoid to make the same mistakes, if any, and try to gather the fundamental needs. What comes there is that, of course, nobody has a crystal ball, and nobody knows exactly what will happen in 2030, but by sure we can at least share trends, basic trends in industry, and catch up on those trends. So this is something that we can do. I've been speaking to 5G AA, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, and they said, the mobile industry comes up with a new technology each 2-3 years, and it is 5G, then it's 5G SA, then it's 5G Advanced, then 6G, but the car needs 5-6 years to be produced, and we cannot change the modem on board. Each two, three years. So we must align our roadmap somehow, and we must stop to do promises. This is something key for us. You know, it's a lesson learned, trying to have a predictive roadmap for next 10 years and stick on that. So that is absolutely, absolutely crucial. Let's go back a little bit to the project. So, your projects. Yeah, do you want to add something, Janina?
Yeah, I would like to add to this comment that for the verticals, they invest into a new technology as soon as they really understand the benefit that they get from that. So, one thing is kind of to make really clear what are the benefits provided by the by using 5G. So that's also something that we look at in our project in the development of the methodological assessment framework. So one of the benefits, for example, is kind of speeding up production of something. So if I can speed up the production, then I can make more revenue, then I can kind of justify the investment into the technology. And that's directly linked also with the costs. So if we reduce the costs, it's easier to generate the revenue because we need to have less investment. So that's something I wanted to add.
Okay, thank you. Very, very interesting. Fair point, absolutely. But both of you, Alessandro, Gennaro, you have managed a lot of verticals in your projects. Do you think there is an optimal number of verticals to engage in a project? I mean, if there's too many, then requests maybe are not current amongst them. Or do you think that you should limit the verticals engaged in your project? Or do you think the more the better? More verticals we have there, and the better it is. Do you have an idea about that? How to manage that in the future?
It's not a simple question. I would say that even if there are, at least talking about the experience that I'm actually having in TiresNet, at the end, even if we have a quite heterogeneous type of vertical, at the end, it seems that from at least the technological point of view, the issues are most common from between them. So again, we are talking about the uplink and latency, etc. So from some extent, it doesn't, let's say, impact exactly the number of verticals because at the end, it is quite clear which could be the technology limitation. At the same time, of course, if you would like to enlarge, let's say the audience that could be really used FIG, of course, we have to engage as much as possible verticals in our initiatives, exactly to make, let's say, the technology ramp up and be, let's say, actually deployed in real commercial services. So, you can see the issue from some several perspectives. Of course, the much the better, but could also imply some issues in managing the project at the same time. And so, as usual, a trade-off and the good balance is the right way. And of course, with experience, we can definitely improve this.
Yeah, I can agree to that. For us in Target X, we currently have four verticals, so manufacturing, energy, construction, and automotive. And to be honest, adding one more would be quite a challenge. So I think there is kind of a maximum, perhaps, not to say that it is four, but I think what is the key point is kind of, do they have an overlap in needs and requirements? So do we have kind of several challenges to address? And something that we shouldn't overlook in this point is also the integration of efforts. So if we have multiple verticals, we do have multiple stakeholders, we do also have multiple test beds. And enlarges the overhead in integration efforts.
Okay. Javier wants to add something?
Yes, because if you have the opportunity in Japan, I think Beyond 5G Consortium has published a very, very good paper. It's a report, it's a thick report, analyzing verticals. And I think what they have done is really worth looking at. And they have analyzed, I think, 25 verticals, and they have created sort of a 2x2 matrix in which they see what 5G and potentially beyond 5G technologies can do from a telecom point of view, the capabilities that can be offered, and also what each vertical sector is going to require in the short term and in the mid to long term. Also from the eyes of the vertical sector. I mean, making the intersection of this 2x2 matrix, you can see what you can do with today technology and what you can do with future technology depending on what approach do you take. I think it's very, very interesting because usually the type of question that we receive from the verticals is what is this from a marginal point of view going to be for making for my own industry. And I think it's a very good analysis because not all the verticals, I think, are going to benefit equally. Some of them are going to benefit more. I have to say that I haven't seen any vertical really that we are not working out in Europe. But it's interesting to see the approach because they really have, I think, a very good pitch of what is in it for this vertical in and why you need to consider 6G for this specific use case and 5G will not be able to make it. So if you have the opportunity, it's available, it's online. And
yeah, very, very good, Javier. I think this is an idea to have a look at this document and see if there's some lesson learned also for us in Europe to know to take from this document. Okay, we're approaching 5 o'clock. Let's have last two questions. One for Vivek. In this moment in GSMA, there's up and running an initiative called Open Gateway Initiative. You know, it is basically an initiative which opens up network functionalities through APIs, and it is based on a roaming model like we had for smartphones that should work also for enterprise. Maybe can you say something more about this initiative, and do you think this is useful to grab more value in the enterprise sector?
Yes, so there's a lot of focus on Open Gateway at the moment, and in fact, there are a lot of operators who are already on board. Basically, they have signed and they're looking to implement and take these, take the network capabilities to market using Open Gateway. And we certainly believe that it is going to open new revenue streams for operators. For example, one of the area, which is, I think, the initial ones, is basically financial services organizations are looking to use these APIs in terms of how can they get access to the geolocation data and other data that's collected by the networks in order to facilitate the real-time or near real-time fraud detection, right? So we believe that there will be, as more and more operators really take this to market, more and more vertical sector organizations will come and they will find out new use cases to really make use of the data and the network capabilities to address specific areas within their own verticals. And API model is, I think, proven model, looking at, you know, the way many of the IT companies offer or expose their services to the developers and in turn generating a lot of revenue. So indeed, I think it is going to be a good initiative from a revenue generation standpoint.
Yeah, thank you. By the way, network APIs have been successfully adopted by a lot of Brazilian banks, for instance, for what you said, for an anti-fraud, for the SIM swap use case. And I think that API model should be also adopted with SIGG when it comes, of course. I think it's a very good suggestion. So I would end up with Javier with the last question, then leave the floor to the audience. Okay, Javier, you have been in Telefonica, you have been in GSMA, you are now in SNS, joined on the taking in a driving seat, so you're kind of pioneer of the industry. You showed us this impressive figure about, you know, the digital economy opportunity in 2030, you know, this huge $33 trillion opportunity, and now we have a lot of appetite to grab some value out of this, but how do you think that Europe can grab value out of this? We've seen that most of the companies are Americans in this moment. Do you have a personal opinion about that, of what Europe can do to enhance its footprint in digital economy?
Just a comment. I saw a report from Stanford that was connecting what they call techno-optimism. It's linked to AI, to the ability to capture growth. I think I mentioned it this morning. And the European countries are all at the bottom quartile of optimism when we look at this type of discussions. So I don't think the opportunity is massive. I mean, nothing is decided. So there are a lot of value that is going to be created. But I think we have to change the momentum in Europe to make it more positive. So, and I think we talk a lot about the problem, and obviously it is what it is, but let's start to talk about solutions also internally. So I think if we can just move a little bit the European countries in that ladder, because the countries that are more in the Asian side are at the top quartile, and I think there is a correlation. So it's not a minor thing. If you believe that things are going to improve and be better, you probably take more risks and do bets that are stronger. If you think that things are not going to look so good, probably you tend to be more conservative and try to even the type of discussions that we are having, there are a lot of, in the substance, there is a lot of doubt or so I think it's let's see the bottle half full instead of half empty. And that would be, I think, the comment. And I think,
I totally agree with you. Optimism plays a really relevant part in that. A couple of days ago, somebody made a very good observation. I'd never thought about that, but they said, you know what? But in Europe, you don't have a Nasdaq. Nasdaq is, you know, the index that in New York allows a lot of companies to get funded, startup companies in the technology world, and we don't have a Nasdaq in Europe. And that is also something which should, on which policymakers should reflect, that we don't have these funding capabilities for our startups. Okay, this is all. I would leave the floor to people in the room. Tun.
Yeah, Christine. We've heard that the business is not in providing the core communication services, but more in everything else. Should there not be the difference from 5G to 6G also be not on the radio interface, which is the core communication, but on the network side, where we have providing AI as a service, providing computers as a service, providing joint communication and sensing as a service, localization as a service? Should we not focus much more on that? And the other question really is, do you see that the verticals would be interested in doing that kind of 6G research on joint communication sensing, on providing AI, etc.?
So I can certainly address, I think, the first part of it. The second part is obviously for the pilots and trials. Yeah. So I think what you're saying is absolutely spot on, right? If the operators and the broader mobile ecosystem has to generate a lot of revenue in the 5G and beyond era, right? It has to be, you know, the operators and everyone has to be really thinking about providing AI services on top of it. That's what we were really, that's what the whole point was, I think, of the presentation. Beyond connectivity, what can you really sell, right? For example, there could be an opportunity through network APIs, like I just mentioned, that expose the data which is already gathered by telecom operators, right, to enable new use cases. In fact, what we are seeing is that many of the operators in the Asia-Pacific region, right, they are making huge investments, right, in terms of basically releasing, or at least at the moment, I think more in R&D, right, where they are focusing on investments in AI, what AI-led services like telco-specific LLMs, etc., they can really offer to, you know, other players and the ecosystem and verticals. So that's the way to go. But I think it will take time, because some of these services, as 6G is implemented, for example, some services around sensing, right, whether sensing data can also be collected and monetized by operators, that will still take time, because 6G itself is like we're talking 2030, and probably services will be developed sometime, I think, post that only. But that's the way to go. That should be the thinking, I think, right from the beginning.
Yeah, I think the verticals will be very happy to adopt whatever brings them benefit. So if with a service architecture, so service architectures are also discussed in verticals. So if there's a value proposition, I think that this would be interesting for the verticals as well. And also kind of for 6G or for 5G, we already have the vision of a more automated, more seamless communications to really, and 6G, we hope to really then fulfill this and offer us these seamless experiences. And I think a service-based architecture can definitely contribute to that.
Okay, thank you. Very valuable comments. So we all hope that 5G will turn into 6G and service platform, of course, because this is all about beyond connectivity, I would say. And connectivity will be part of the business, but not the most relevant part. So this is, of course, a hype that we still have. Not sure if there are other comments in the room.
So very interesting discussions. Thanks for sharing your thoughts about these StreamD projects, I mean, which are part of the R&I program, the SNSAU. I was wondering, the public funding that is being put into those projects, things that without that public funding would not have happened. I mean, by comparing, I mean, the approach in the EU with the approach in the US, right? For instance, I mean, it's mostly about about companies, right? So running the show. Here, we're taking advantage of this, and I was wondering if it allows you to tackle some activities that otherwise possible, or doing things more, say, comprehensively, so larger number of trials. I mean, if you have a view on this.
Thank you for the question. I think that, I mean, I'm following founded projects since a lot of time, but what I noticed in the last period, thanks to the founding, that let's say we were really able already to engage verticals inside the project. That was something that at the beginning was not the case. So, of course, the founding helps also the collaboration between different entities that in other, let's say, situation, maybe we'll collaborate just, let's say, to find a possible commercialization of solution, while here we can actually provide trials and try to understand if technology can be of help to the vertical. So I think that, this type of approach is really helpful, really to build a solid basis that, of course, should be exploited then for commercial services in a later stage. So the point is that the founding should not, let's say, finish with the project, but should continue afterwards with actual commercial services deployment, etc., between the parties already present in the project, but of course, let's say, extending to other parties. So I think that what is important for the different projects is at the end of their activity really to, let's say, maybe organize workshop also to third parties external to the project, exactly to spread, let's say, the results towards the community and really enable, let's say, this founding have more, outcomes with respect to just results in the project.
Yeah, what I'd like to add is kind of that, especially what we see with this financial support for third-party projects, is, for example, in the TargetX project, we have 15 entities in a consortium, and we do have 98 entities that are funded through the FSDP projects. So in total, we are over 100 entities that are funded through this one project. And this kind of really nicely shows how we can enlarge the ecosystem and bring in new players. So I think also without public funding, some testing also in verticals would take place. But I imagine it to be much more closed and not so much public available information and also not so much access to SMEs, for example.
Other question from you on your side, Kos? I think we can wrap up. I will leave the floor to Kostas for a short wrap-up of the study. Kostas is the project leader of SNSI's project, so that is organizing this event.
Yes, thank you so much, Rafael, and many thanks to all of you for coming here. I have the always fun task of trying to summarize everything we discussed here today, which is not an easy thing to do. I've been taking notes and trying to sort of bring to a higher abstraction level of what it is that we learned through today's event. And actually boiling down to it, I think we're more or less aligned, and it feels that we have common experiences coming either from the public side, the project side, private side, operators, etc. So we started with a very interesting, let's say, I would say problem definition from Javier and Vivek about Where do we stand with regards to the digital economy and digital transformation and the position we would all like to see Europe in and the European stakeholders, and that there's so much more, hopefully, that we can do. And practically also strengthened by the statements from the operators that, yes, we see that just following this down the same path will not be enough in this case. And we need to recognize this and try to find alternative ways to approach it. Big discussion on the alternative ways, but this is why it's always fun to be in such events. And then we heard from two of the projects leading this, and I actually kept, you both said something very interesting and striking to me. So Yanina, you mentioned that, for instance, a lot of the SMEs and experimenters you experimented with, it was their first contact with 5G, right? And we keep saying that we need to develop solutions that are working for the industry and not coming just from the technological push. And that's exactly what we need to be doing. And it seems that we're early on in 6G. Perhaps we should have done it a little bit earlier in 5G. But it feels like progress. And Alessandro, in the same wavelength, you mentioned that with a lot of the experimenters you had contact with, the first challenge was to define a common terminology, basically find the common language that you could speak. So that even we have such a big gap, it's very hard to start working together. So these are already very important steps. That thankfully, it seems that from the SNSJU, at least, we're really taking very seriously now, and we tried to reach out to this community. This message was then further strengthened also by our esteemed guest from Japan. And you also used the term that I really like a social implementation of 6G. So not just trying to push 6G down the throat of some people, but really listening and working with them to see what we can do. I mean, we've already discussed this in 5G era, but it feels like we're taking a little bit more seriously this time. And it's like a global concern that everybody seems to be sharing. And again, we heard that from the other international speakers, and especially with this data, let's say tsunami that we're expecting, as you very well put it, Javier, is very interesting, because even things that we consider potentially resolved by 5G, we haven't really seen the full expansion of this use case and the scalability levels that we need to reach in order to serve them. So bottom line, we all come from potentially different backgrounds, but it feels that there's a very clear message now that we cannot be working at this purely from a technological side, purely listening to engineers, but really involved in the community, the SMEs, really looking forward to what each of the use cases have to offer. And at least events like this are indeed, hopefully, you know, a small stone in this big wall that we need to build to listen to each other and try to push in this direction. So with that respect, I think today we've heard from our international colleagues, we've heard from different vertical industries, from the public side and from the operators. So personally, I'm very happy because this is exactly what SNS ICE is trying to do, is unite these voices, try to get an understanding of everybody and sit down at the same table. We still have a lot of work ahead of us, but I'm confident we can get there and make this more of an even better success story. So that's it for me. Thanks so much to Rafaela and Carles for organizing this, and to our colleagues for joining. And a big applause to all of you, I would say.
So once again, many thanks to all of you. It was really a pleasure to chair this co-creation event. So hope you also had some good time here with us. And with this, I think.
Yeah, thank you. I want to, of course, thank all the panelists to be here and to speak. A very, very special thank from my part to Mr. Kazaki, who came from Japan to share his experience for us. He's really coming from the other part of the world. So really, really a special, special thank you for that. And thank you for people connecting from US and from Japan, from other time zones, so leaving time from their sleep to witness what they're doing there. And so thank you all, and see you next year here in Riga.
This podcast is brought to you by SNS ICE, an EU-backed project focused on creating a collaborative environment for the development and deployment of 6G smart networks and services. The project has received funding from the European Union's Horizon Europe Research and Innovation Programme under Grant Agreement number 1010958411.